Listening, Unit 9, page 134, C.
You will hear three short segments from a radio program. The program is called Striking Out. You will hear what three different radio guests have to say about three different topics. After each talk, you will be asked some questions. From the three answer choices given, you should choose the one that best answers the question according to the information you heard. Segment 1.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Striking Out, in which we hear about people's firsts. This week we're starting with Elena, talking about her driving test. Perhaps you have some tips for passing it?
Well, I took my test in Greece, so I think my experience might be different from people who took the test in another country. I tried to put off driving as long as possible, but when I moved out of the city, I found I really couldn't get by without a car. I had to rely on other people to drive me places because the bus service was non-existent. So I plucked up the courage to take lessons.
Are lessons mandatory if you want to take a test, or can you just get a friend to teach you?
As far as I know, they are mandatory. I had to take at least 21 hours of theory lessons and 20 hours of practical lessons, and I ended up taking a lot more, so it was quite expensive. I was not exactly confident, and I wouldn't have wanted anyone but a qualified instructor teaching me. Also, of course, you're that much safer with the driving school car, which has dual controls, so if you make a serious mistake, the instructor can put his foot on the brake.
So tell me about the test. How was that conducted exactly?
First, you have to pass the theory test, in which there are 30 questions, and you're only allowed to make one mistake. I found that bad enough, but the practical test was even more nerve-wracking. My instructor drove me to the test centre, along with another student from the same driving school. I remember it was July, in the middle of a heat wave, and the air conditioning in the car wasn't working. There were others from other schools too, and two examiners. The examiners sit in the back of the test taker's car, and the student's instructor sits in the front passenger seat.
The ultimate backseat drivers.
Yes, but that's not all. While each candidate is taking their turn, the other cars follow in a kind of convoy, watching them take their test. If the student makes a mistake, they just have to stop the car there and then, and the test is over. Then it's the next person's turn. Some people were so nervous they couldn't even start the car, and they were not given a second chance.
Oh, that does seem rather harsh.
I failed this test 3 times because I didn't reverse around a corner correctly. Eventually, I passed, and now I have been driving for many years, and I'm happy to say I never needed this manoeuvre.
Number 1. What was Elena's attitude towards learning to drive? A. She lacked motivation to start. B. She was reluctant to try it. C. She was put off by the high cost. Number 2. What do both speakers agree about? A. Maneuvers are emphasised too much in the test. B. Not being allowed to complete the test is unfair. C. Having two examiners makes test takers nervous. Segment 2.
With house prices at a record high, it's hard for young people to get a foot on the property ladder. But our next guest thinks he will soon solve this problem.
Yes, that's true. I was fed up with being tied to my mum's apron strings, but I couldn't afford the deposit to buy a house. Rents in my area are also very high, so instead of being a tenant, I decided to try out life as a property guardian. It's a bit different from being a tenant because you don't have quite as many rights and there are a lot of rules, but it's working for me. I went through an agency and found a really good deal sharing a large house in the suburbs with a few other people, some of whom are musicians like me. The idea is that you occupy a vacant property and therefore are able to keep an eye on it and protect it from squatters, for example, until the owners need it. It's great for young people because you can move out almost on a whim. You only have to give 14 days' notice. Although, on the flip side, they can give you 28 days' notice if they need you to move out. So it suits people who adapt easily and are not about to put down roots anywhere really fast. Also, they don't allow pets or dependents, so it mostly suits young, single people.
So the contract is really short-term?
Well, the agency says that most properties are available for 2 to 3 months. But I've been lucky so far, and I've been in the same place for 6 months. You have to be ready to move out if necessary, but they will help you find another place when yours is no longer available. It suits me fine. I pay about a third of what I would pay for something similar as a tenant, and I have masses more space than I could otherwise afford. I'm used to living with very little stuff, and whenever the time comes to move on, I can just pack up a small van and go. Being a guardian is only for people with a steady income, and you also have to stay at the property. You're not supposed to leave for more than a few days. I've met lots of like-minded people during my time here, and with the money I'm saving on rent, I'll be able to afford a deposit on a small flat in future and finally get a mortgage.
Number 3. What kind of person must a property guardian be? A. Flexible and responsible. B. Professional and reliable. C. Spontaneous and creative. Number 4. Why does being a property guardian appeal to Matt? A. He needs a lot of space to store his things. B. He does not want a permanent home. C. It is a lot cheaper than the alternatives. Segment 3.
People have been talking to us about their first job. Rebecca is now in charge of a major art gallery, but her first job was rather less glamorous.
Yes, that's right. I came out of university with masses of confidence, especially after landing a job in an art gallery. This really was my dream job, or so I thought. Well, I was PA to the director, which sounded rather important, but it turned out I was just a glorified secretary, really. I really got the wind knocked out of my sails, you know. I mean, looking back, I thought I knew everything, and in fact, well, like a lot of fresh-faced young graduates straight out of university, I knew nothing about the world of work. I had this idea that a degree meant that I would be treated with respect everywhere, whereas in fact, I was often asked to do menial tasks like fetching the sandwiches and coffee.
Which, of course, you did with great success.
Well, it was a kind of test in a way, you know. They wanted to see whether you would complain or do it with a smile on your face. These kinds of things just gave me the chance to get to know some of the senior staff better, and they appreciated the fact that I just got on with it. Now, of course, I do the same to my juniors. Another thing I confess I had to learn was telephone etiquette. Really, I had no idea, but listening to the way the others dealt with phone calls helped a lot. I now have a telephone voice, my family say. It's a very clear, authoritative voice I put on when I'm on the phone with clients. It goes with my suit. When I first turned up for work, I wore the wrong clothes. I dressed a bit too old, if you know what I mean. After being in the job for a while, I picked up on the dress code. A friendly colleague took me shopping even, before they let me meet clients face to face. Really, the world of work is so different from student life, and there's a lot more pressure. But I learned a lot on the job, and now I'm in the position where people bring me sandwiches.
Number 5. How does Rebecca describe her first job? A. It was what she had always dreamt of. B. It was harder than expected. C. It was rather a shock. Number 6. What did Rebecca have to learn? A. How to fit in at the company. B. How to deal with difficult clients. C. How to place telephone orders.